Oh boy, it's the Great Debate.
Oh boy, oh boy.
Here we go.
I hope you had a good holiday, everybody. And by that I mean Christmas.
The holiday.
The only holiday. Here's a top for you, Steve Healy. I've put 4 minutes on the clock. Are you ready to debate? This is a listener top submitted by listener Noah B. Oh. Thank you, Noah. And that top is Twitter is better than food trucks.
Okay, I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. First, an attack on food trucks. They are 90% gross. They are not very good. A lot of crappy people with a bad food idea put it in a truck and act like that's something special. In a lot of places, Los Angeles is probably the best food truck city in the world because the weather is pretty reliably pleasant, and it's still a pain in the rump to get your messy food from the truck and have to sit on the curb or something, try to eat it. It's inconvenient and a mess. The line is always disorganized. You've no idea how long it's going to take. Food trucks are not that great. Twitter, on the other hand, is like the number one form of interactive entertainment on your phone. You can see the thoughts and ideas of politicians, artists, musicians, your favorite celebrities, porn stars, athletes, whatever you want is streaming through in a self-curated list. You can interact, engage, make jokes, get information, talk to fellow sports fans, learn about movies, get reviews of things, have any kind of interaction you like. It's fun. It's spontaneous. It's so addictive that the President of the United States can't stop doing it. Twitter is fun and exciting and cool. Food trucks are basically crappy moving restaurants that clog up the roads.
Okay, so Twitter for most people is mostly a miserable experience. People are addicted to it, I would agree, but they don't enjoy it. It is a huge reason why a lot of people, Medina included, take Twitter sabbaticals, because it's not fun. It's not fulfilling. It actually leads to more sort of like, you know, mental chaos in your head. It makes you feel both like you're missing out and like you're part of negative energy that's going on in the world. You mentioned something interesting about food trucks, which is that you claimed that Los Angeles was the greatest food truck city. Well, I would actually argue that you have a skewed view of food trucks. LA is not the greatest food truck city. It's actually, I would say, one of the most saturated food truck markets. And for that reason, there are a lot of bad food trucks in Los Angeles. Go to a city like Austin and you'll find that the bar for food trucks is much higher. Go to a random food truck in most of the cities in the United States, or dare I say the world, and you'll find that you'll have a pretty great experience. Food trucks are easier to skip than Twitter. Is that right? Wait, what side? Is that the right side of the argument to be on?
It could go either way.
What am I arguing again?
You're arguing that food trucks are better.
Yeah, food trucks are better because if you don't like a food truck, then you just don't go to it. Whereas Twitter, it's because you're pulled to it all the time. It's, yes, you can like mute people and stuff, but even the act of muting you feel bad about. You have to follow certain people. You're, as you said, also, by the way, like one of your pieces of evidence was that the president does it. Are you really going to say that like most of the things that Donald Trump does are better than food trucks? I would say no. That's kind of my opening statement.
A lot of Dave's argument comes down to the fact that Twitter is like unbelievably addictive. He said for most people, Twitter is a negative experience. But actually, for most people, Twitter is a nothing experience. Most people don't even bother with Twitter. They don't have to
food trucks. Most people don't go to food trucks.
Okay, great. So you don't have to bother with this thing you don't want to. Meanwhile, food trucks are taking up space in the road. They're taking up parking spots. Yeah, sure. Food trucks driving around causing... Austin's one of the trafficiest cities in the country. Mm-hmm. And taking up two or three parking spots in downtown, that's miserable.
How many food trucks are there compared to all the other vehicles in Austin, Texas? What are you talking about?
In the congested areas, they're one of the huge takers-uppers of space. That's just a fact. Yeah.
No traffic jam has ever been caused by...
Disagree. Many a traffic jam's been caused, especially in Austin, city of food truck addicts in your world.
You're off the rails or you're being facetious.
No,
like,
I'm not.
I feel bad.
In,
for you
in downtown places, like outside of museums or like busy
museums.
Places where people get
museums.
Congregate, food trucks clog up a lot of space and cause
they
problems for people.
They provide a great public good. Like if you go, like you used to work down there right outside LACMA where all those food trucks
I
are.
I hate that. It's a nightmare.
We're done? Oh, you hated that? I don't believe you.
I think food trucks are highly overrated, yeah.
Do you want to keep going? No.
No, we can just talk about it. What did you think? And then maybe we'll keep talking about it a little bit.
I don't know. I don't know what I thought on that one.
I don't either.
That was a tough one.
Mm.
Okay, let me tell you some arguments that I enjoyed.
Okay.
one of Dave's arguments I enjoyed, which was that what's nice about food trucks is if you're not into it, it's very easy to put away.
Yeah. If you, once you got Twitter on your phone.
Now, Healy, like, come on, tell me you didn't like that argument.
I think it's okay, but I think most people don't use Twitter. Like,
yeah, right.
Yes, but hold, but here's let me refine that argument a little bit. Oh, go ahead, Mindy.
What the thing is, whether or not you use Twitter now, if you use anything else, you're exposed to what people said and did on Twitter.
And that's a good argument. Really,
it grabs the news cycle now in a way that's, I think, kind of not great for the
world
or
wish
the country.
David made that argument.
Yeah. I do too. We all do.
So maybe Dave didn't win. I don't know.
And that's fine. And
but I don't
disagree,
know that
but that's fine.
Healy won either. Because what was Healy's best argument?
I can't even remember what traffic jams.
He made an argument that food trucks cause traffic jams. I didn't buy that.
That was sad. That was like watching a once great heavyweight get pummeled, or like try to throw a jab, but like not even be able to reach.
Food trucks are a pain in the ass, and a lot of people, I think, have had the experience I have had of driving behind a food truck, and it sucks. Jeez, and also like just taking up parking spots.
I've never had a big. A bad experience with a food truck.
Favorite food truck in LA? Anyone?
I don't. I mean, just a generic taco truck is what I like.
Yeah, I
generic
like this.
Generic taco truck.
Yes, I would take that over like Mitzi's waffle extravaganza. Right. Whatever.
Yeah. Oh. There's a truck called Viva Taco Azteca that parks on Figueroa at 52nd at the 7-Eleven. That's my favorite taco truck.
It sounds pretty good.
I highly recommend it for those in Highland Park. Cool, guys.
Highland Park has got to be the world center, like the podcasting.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it's Marin, it's on the map.
It's on the map for podcasting.
Podcast Valley.
Yeah. Podcast Valley.
We're up here on Podcast Hill.
Yeah, we're kind of looking over Podcast Valley. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
Is it kind of an aggressive move to podcast from Mark Maron's hometown? Is he
I own the podcast backyard.
He's not cool with it.
I would expect a cease and desist pretty soon because it can't be kosher.
There's a story about Hemingway that he was telling his editor, Edmund Wilson or whatever, that he put a gun on the table. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, you know, tomorrow I'm going to be driving through Mississippi.
Mm.
And that's Faulkner country. And he's a serious rival. So he had a gun.
Just in case.
In case a Faulkner fan was like, you get the hell out of here. It's Faulkner country.
That was supposed to mean he was going to kill Faulkner.
Oh, no. Right? I think he was imagining it was for self-defense.
Yeah. Did Faulkner have, were there guys out there that were just like, oh, you're in Faulkner's home?
Well, this is back in the literary wars when things got pretty hairy.
I think most people then and now in Faulkner's home state could care less.
Are we in host chat?
I think so, yeah. We're talking about Hemingway and Faulkner.
Do you guys have any New Year's resolutions?
Oh, I got to come up with a good one.
Last year, I slam, bang, home run my New Year's resolution.
Tell me everything.
My New Year's resolution was get a cabin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, baby.
And I did.
You did it.
That's great. Yeah.
Wow.
So and I don't know how I'm going to live up style. To that. That might be a once-in-a-decade resolution smash.
I don't think anyone wants a better record than that, once-in-a-decade, where you really smash one out of the park.
Yeah, you don't. Most of the time, you don't really want to nail your resolution.
What?
Do you have a good... You're a big resolutions guy.
I have made some good... I think here's the key to making a good resolution. You don't think big, think small. So I noticed one year that I kept spilling things at the table and being kind of clumsy, and so I made a New Year's resolution to stop spilling things. Mm-hmm. And it made just a tiny improvement in my life that was worth having.
How That's did great. You stop spilling things?
I think I tried to imagine it in advance and pay more attention Visualize. To what I was doing and realize like, oh, that will lead to spilling this thing if I am careless and don't do that. And then, you know, gradually I got there. I still spill shit all the time, but maybe it's less than I would otherwise.
I wouldn't think of you as a big spiller.
Yeah. I feel like that doesn't fit with my...
We can go through my shirts and you'll see all the stains everywhere. Yeah.
But it's like you're so chill that you don't even care about gravity
like,
or something.
Take a big bite and then blah. That's kind of, I'm never going to get over that. But knocking things over and spilling, I don't
Well, you're going to be a Taco Azteca truck. Yeah, you're going to spill on yourself.
Of course. What are you going
to
do?
Dave, your resolution is to stop masturbating in the toilet. That's good. cool.
I mean, you heard me make a joke about you.
I wanted to steal
you.
It. It's
yeah,
funny.
So lame, dude. In the toilet?
What do
you
got for your New Year's resolution?
I haven't thought about next year's resolutions, but it is important. I need a good one. This year I did resolve to...
Win a couple debates.
Yeah, that's funny, too. I did resolve to read more and
what?
Read a certain
You're
number
a prodigious
books.
Reader.
Yeah, I
you're
wanted
incredible.
To...
Your house is stacked with books you've just read.
Yeah, you're a good reader.
Well, that's what I wanted to do, and I'm
did
on track
do...
for my goal. I put it... Yeah,
how did
it's
you
going well.
Frame your goal?
Well...
Being a good reader to begin with. What was the... Where was your baseline, and then what were you trying to reach?
Well... Part of this is there's a bit of controversy here, and it all goes back to is listening to a book reading a book.
Sure. Okay. Mm.
So I'm trying to hit, I don't want to throw numbers out there because it's going to sound lame, but I'm trying to hit two different benchmarks. I've got 3 weeks left
Say
to do.
Say the numbers,
it.
Babe.
No, I'm not going to do
no,
it.
No, please.
But that
please,
are basically,
please,
come on.
Like,
you can't cheat the listeners like that.
That sucks,
Say the
man.
Numbers.
No.
50?
Well, that's one of the numbers. Sort of.
Is that listened to books?
No,
or read
that's
books?
Like how many books. Look.
You want to read a book a week.
Yeah.
Plus a 2 week vacation.
Something or like that. Is, and yeah. then that doesn't include audiobooks.
Okay. What are the other numbers?
No, the other. I wanted to read 52 books and I wanted to combined process. 100 books.
Oh, great.
Reading and listen to.
Well, cool. This is so shocking to say those numbers.
No, but it sounds
like. And you're
I
on
mean,
track.
Yeah, I'm going to get there.
That's
I'm
fantastic.
Get there, I think. It's
we,
be
you
close.
Should sponsor. So we should sponsor some reading programs out there. You can get to the great
that's
debates.
That'd be cool.
Yes.
If you read this many books, you can compete.
Yeah. How you do I do mean? That?
I don't know. We could reach out to some people.
I feel like a jerk now.
Dan
that's
and
not
I.
That, I mean, I'm
what actually, are you talking
yeah,
about?
What,
you're a role model.
I gotta get off my fucking. Get out of my own ass.
Dan and I recently read the same book,
oh,
The Tao of Charlie Munger.
Oh, what a great book. I listened what? To it on...
I on half listened book. To it, half read it in book form. Charlie Munger, we've talked about him before.
Did
Warren
you enjoy
Buffett's
that?
Partner,
I read that.
Loved it. Great book. It's just a guy who takes some of Charlie's statements and sort of processes them.
I don't
and
even know who
them.
That is.
Charlie Munger is like Warren Buffett's Warren Buffett.
Oh, yeah.
And one thing Charlie says is, you know, people wonder how you get so smart and wise. You get it sitting on your ass,
mm-hmm.
reading.
Reading.
He says his family thinks he's just two pair of legs sticking out of a book.
What does that mean?
Those guys
read
himself
into
a ball.
The guy's always reading.
That's his yeah. whole job in life is to read, and then they make investments based on the shit that they read. They make a lot of money doing that.
Earlier tonight, I was I stopped to eat and watch the Patriots Monday Night Football game, mm-hmm. recording this on a Monday night. Mm-hmm. And I was also, like, during halftime reading The Bell Jar.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I've never read it.
Cool.
And I was like, maybe I might be the only person simultaneously watching football
and
reading
the
Bell Jar.
Could be, yeah.
Or maybe there's 12 people. If you're out there and you were watching...
Sylvia Patz.
Sylvia, hashtag Sylvia Patz. If you were out there watching the Patriots Dolphins game and reading the Bell Jar, tweet at me.
That's called doing a Sylvia Patz.
And hashtag Sylvia Patz.
Guys, I'm going to get us back into a debate. Oh, wait, let me tell you my resolution for this year, which is that I want to be a good dad.
You said think small.
Yeah.
That's huge.
I've got a small kid. I don't have to do
that's
that
cute.
Much.
Okay. You do. Buddy, you've got it covered, man. I'm not worried about
don't
that.
Spill your
But
baby.
I'm, my point
yeah,
is, like, I'm not trying
baby.
To...
Don't spill Hazel.
I got a narrow focus. I don't need to
the
achieve
small
big
organism.
Goals out there this year. Just like, let's be a good dad.
Cool.
Okay. Here's our top for the main event. Steve Healy's going to take the pro.
All right. I can do that.
Are you guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, baby.
Being funny is important... For a politician.
I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. Humor is a crucial way that humans connect. The main job of a politician is connecting with other people and with the opposition. Humor is a great way to cut through tension. It's a great way to get someone's attention when you're giving a public speech. It's a great way to cut through tension when you're at loggerheads with somebody and the argument is escalating, which happens all the time for politicians. Politics is basically a battle of interests, and humor is a fantastic way to connect. Trump, look. Say what you will about him, the guy's funny. Obama was funny. Bill Clinton was funny. George W. Bush was funny. I'd argue the last unfunny politician You could say George H.W. Bush, but I kind of have a soft spot for him. Jimmy Carter, probably the last truly unfunny president, and his presidency, I think, has been judged largely a failure. Before him, the Ronald Reagan, who is basically Johnny Carson. There's hour-long CDs you can get of Reagan's comedy at the Reagan Library. The guy was funny. People liked him. Humor is hugely crucial for a politician. It's important. Maybe it shouldn't be. In an ideal world, maybe it wouldn't be, but unfortunately, it is.
I want to start by pushing back against this notion that Donald Trump is funny. I don't think he's funny at all. I don't think we laugh at him, but he's not funny. If we had dinner with him, you wouldn't laugh at one thing he said. Like, the jokes he makes are terrible. Mm. And
he's not
jokes
a politician.
He makes are like,
he would be the first to say he's not a politician.
Well, he was not a politician.
And also, he's got a terrible approval rating. Okay, well, so humor would help him a lot.
He was part of your opening.
You're right.
Statement.
I revise. I take Trump off the list.
Okay. I think that politicians, when these examples you give of people being funny, politicians are graded on such an immense curve for being funny. George W. Bush isn't a funny person. Like, if you put in a room with funny people, he'd be the least funny person in the room. Same with his dad. They're not actually funny. They deliver canned jokes that they've heard before. Ronald Reagan, who I think you said, did you say Reagan was funny?
Yeah.
Reagan was famous for repeating the same jokes. He was the guy who said, like, did that joke about, like, good thing you're not a Democrat after. He did that joke like six times because he wasn't funny. He's not a funny person.
Most comedians do their act 100 times a year.
Yes, but people understand that that's what they're doing, and they know they don't.
Politicians are going to repeat jokes, Dave. I'm sorry to burst the bubble for you,
but
the president of the United States might use
the
joke six times.
Which is that the way that you judge the humor of a politician is very different than the way that you judge the humor of an actual human being. And the one person, or one of the few people who actually has been funny, who became a very prominent politician in a recent memory, is Al Franken. And one of the first, now disgraced Senator Al Franken, or resigned senator, one of the first things he did was he had to teach himself never to try to be funny at all. And the reason he did that was because he knew that if he did, it would be counterproductive to his mission as a senator. Now, I would say that there are two.
Okay, Dave, I've got to stop here because the guy rode his humor to political success.
No,
yes, in his Senate proceedings, he's trying to get respect for himself, he did have to dehumorize himself. But then he wrote an extremely popular, humorous memoir about being a senator. We never would have heard of the guy if he wasn't funny. Humor was the most important thing to the political career of Al Franken.
Humor
hearings, he wanted to downplay his humor.
It wasn't just Senate hearings, Healy. If you read his actual book, you would know that it wasn't just in Senate hearings. It was also on the campaign trail. It was the moment he became a politician that he realized that he could no longer be funny. And he went through, as he said, the dehumorizing process, or the dehumorizer, whatever it is you want to call it. So for you to, you're oversimplifying, you're actually putting... narrowing it down too much.
Actually, you're oversimplifying it, Dave, because this is the rare case of a professional comedian trying to achieve respect.
I know,
so he did have to downgrade his humor and show he had the serious side as well.
Yeah, because
we would never have heard of him.
We would never have heard of him
as a politician if not for humor.
He couldn't take it. He was the one guy who was actually funny. People like...
Okay, Al Franken himself has said that his fellow senators are funny. He quotes their jokes in his book.
I actually think that what he said is that they're funnier than you'd think they be, and that they're like warm and they're fun to be with. I don't think he actually thinks that a lot of them are funny. And the ones that are,
I've heard him say, my colleagues are funny.
Okay, fine. Well, I'm sure he says a lot of nice things about his colleagues, but I also don't think that he actually thinks that they're like great people. I mean, I'm sorry if I'm not taking Al Franken at his word when he says that whatever, fucking Bob Corker is hysterical and should be, you know, opening for fucking Whitney Cummings, but I don't believe him. I don't think they're funny people. Who's the funniest senator right now?
Lindsey Graham.
Okay, well, he's not funny. He sucks. And if he's funny,
in Al Franken's book, he tells a pretty funny spur-of-the-moment joke that Lindsey Graham told him.
What's the joke?
Al Franken's in the bathroom, and he sees Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham is running for president. He says, oh, you know, Senator, if I were a Republican, I'd vote for you. And Lindsey Graham immediately goes, yeah, that's my problem.
Right. So that's fine as, like, that's a politician's joke. It's a perfect example of a joke that a politician makes. It's not fun. Like, if a comedian said that, you'd be like, okay, there's no, like, the standard for a let me try to reframe what we're talking about a little bit, because
you better do something.
No, oh, I've already won. You have
what?
Like,
are you
that's
kidding?
That's the funniest
you
thing.
You got
that
knocked
you can
out
say.
Immediately and are crawling out of the ring.
Not at all. I'm feeling great right now.
What?
Here's what I want to say about, like, I thought it would be interesting maybe if we take this angle. Whether or not, is it what was the phrase?
Find an angle,
the topic?
Do something, yeah.
Healy, shut up for a second. Being a
Dave, this is debates,
being funny
not
is
arguments.
Important for a politician? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, so I would say that
he's lost the topic.
Yeah. Being funny is important for
okay,
a politician.
So I would say that we
the
break
doctor
that down.
Should call the fight.
The doctor's, whatever. Usually it's the referee and not the doctor who calls them. But basically, I would say that breaks down into two things. One is, like, does it help to be elected? And the second is, does it help to actually get things accomplished? Does it help to be actually be, like, someone who achieves things, someone who gets things done? And I would say that for both of those, neither of those is helpful. I would say that humor is a detriment to someone who's trying to be elected, and humor is a detriment to someone who's trying to achieve things in the Senate. Neither of the, like, the people who have the most gravitas and the people who have the most, like, political experience and the most political wherewithal are the ones who get elected, the ones who get...
Who do you think, it, like, got the most done in the Senate?
I have no idea.
Bob Dole, LBJ, Ted Kennedy?
I don't know. I just certainly know that Ted... By the way, every joke that Ted Kennedy ever told was terrible. One of the lead... I would say Ted Kennedy is, like, a good nominee for that, and he had... He was, like... every time he tried to, like, be humorous at all, it was awkward and it felt like he was tripping over his words. I mean, Healy, if you want to, like, watch something funny, are you going to watch the Al Smith dinner or are you going to watch anything else?
If you bomb at the Al Smith dinner, you're demonstrating that you're not a very successful politician. Like, any politician who's achieved success can handle themselves fine at the Al Smith dinner. Are they as funny as Sarah Silverman? No, they're not professional comedians, and their thing isn't being funny all the time. But humor and being funny is an important part of the politician's skill set. Being funny is important to a politician.
In fact, the very existence of the Al Smith dinner proves how unimportant it is. It's basically like, okay, there's one day a year on the campaign thing that we all wish we could get rid of, but there's this stupid charity, not stupid charity, but there's for this charity, it's this fucking Al Smith dinner thing. You have to be funny one night. It's the one night when you can make jokes. We do it then, and then we get it over with.
You
we get back
do
on
not
the campaign
miss it.
Control.
It
we're
has
serious.
To happen. It has to be an important part of the presidential campaign. The two candidates have to be there. They both have to be funny. It's named after a famous funny politician.
Of the Al Smith dinner.
It doesn't matter. The politicians have to do it because they know being able to demonstrate this side of your humanity is going to be an important part of being a politician.
Do you think, like, Jerry Brown is funny? Do you think Bill Bradley was funny?
Bill Bradley wasn't very funny, and his political career pretty much fizzled out. I think a little humor, he would have gotten a lot farther.
In my estimation, one of the, like, better progressive senators of the 20th
century. He couldn't play in the national level in large part because he didn't have any humor.
I don't think that I really
it
doubt
hurt
that that's
him.
Why
it hurt
he,
his ability to engage with people.
You think that he would have been president if he was funnier, is that what you're saying?
I think if he were 10% funnier, he would have gone a lot farther, yeah.
Hmm. Can we have closing statements?
Oh, who goes first?
Healy.
Okay. I think I've made a strong case that humor is a quality of any politician who's gotten to a level you've heard of. It's a key element to connecting with voters, with other people that you oppose with. We got way down the road on Al Franken for some reason, a man who built a political career on humor, demonstrating this principle at the most extreme. I think that I have shown that being funny is important to a politician.
I want to make one final point about Al Franken. He did not build a political career on being funny. He built a career on being funny, and then because of his prominence, he was able to enter the field of politics. And the moment he did, he very consciously became unfunny. Politicians are not funny. Being funny is not important to being a politician. The version of humor that you are hearing from politicians is not actual comedy. It's not actual humor. It is politics in and of itself. It is public domain humor. It is gentle teases. It is dad jokes. It is jokes that people say at the barbecue. It is one-liners that's been scripted by other people. That's not being funny. That's being a politician. I woke up Hazel. I'm sorry.
What baby Hazel thinks of that debate.
Ooh. Okay, here's my take on this one. Yeah. It's a out there are two groups of listeners, and one group of them believes that Healy won 90%. In their hearts, And the other group of the lean kingers, they believe...
The strong lean kinger. God bless them. We need them in the world.
That, no, not the strong. Just the, anyone who's on that side, I think, believe King wins. And so this is where my job gets hard, is because I can't really be a fan. I do kind of think that... I don't know. I'm not sure who won.
Wow. What does Hazel think?
We're going to ask her in about... 4 years.
Yeah, yeah, that's about right. She doesn't need to be a part of this nonsense.
Okay, Dave, do you in your heart think that humor is important, or being funny is important to a politician?
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay. What? I mean, yeah. I do believe some of what I said, that like it's a dumbed down or like more accessible version of being funny.
But I mean,
like,
yeah, by the way, most comedy, like a lot of comedy, is a dumbed down dad joke. Like Reader's Dot, Dave Barry, like a lot of popular comedy is sure sort of dad joke.
Yeah. I mean, a huge what's part you, of Dave, it is like, campaigning is just like getting up there and performing on some level, like. In the same way that, like, a big part of public speaking is being funny.
Being sure. Crying a few jokes.
Well, you should have said that.
I did.
Nope. I don't remember that. Playback to tape.
Well, guys, I had a great time.
Healy, what do you think you could... Sorry, are we out of time?
Yeah, almost.
Okay, real quick. What's the highest level of public office you think you could attain if you devoted your life to it starting now?
Congress. U.S. Congressman.
I think that's about right.
Like a House.
U.S. Congress.
I think House. You could do it, though.
Yeah.
That's something that's confusing to me. It's my impression that Congress is both the House
I should
and the Senate.
I'm sorry. I should have said U.S. House of Representatives.
Yeah. But commonly when we say Congress, we mean the House.
Yeah. It's sort of like a Mac and PC thing where like PC, like Macs should be personal computers.
Right, they are personal computers.
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. Me or you? You?
Both.
I don't think I could get elected anywhere. I think you... I mean, I could maybe get on like the PTA of something if I put my life into it.
Right. I think I could get a
city council.
School board for sure.
Yeah.
City council, depending on how big the town is.
I could see a Mayor Medina for sure.
I could make mayor of like Winters.
Yeah,
if
yeah
I
maybe.
Totally went back and
why
tried.
Why aren't you the mayor of Winters,
it's
California?
It's a good question. One day. I might run. We'll see.
Well, he doesn't live there. That's one reason.
That's a good reason.
For now.
I could see you, Dave, as a mayor.
Fucking tell her.
Guys, I don't know if you can hear that in the background. That's my child talking.
That's amazing. Hazel Medina is real and alive.
She's real and alive. She's out there.
Hazy days.
Hazy days, bro.
What's your first emotion when you hear that crying?
I mean, it makes me happy.
Yeah.
Ah, damn.
It's a big grin on my face.
That's amazing. It's so cool.
Well, guys, I had a great time this episode. I had a great time this year. What a big year for the Great Debates, and I hope you guys thought so too. Write to us, share your end of year thoughts with us, and we'll see you out there in 2018. We're Great Debate 69 everywhere. We're looking forward to taking on 2018 together with you. Happy New Year to everybody. See you next week on the Great Debates.
The Great Debates is produced by Mark Caracello. The theme song was composed by Christopher Knight. The debaters are Steve Healy and Dave King, and the podcast is moderated by Dan Medina.